Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Full or part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
We have news to report on the Media Project this week, so stand by. This is what Paul Harvey used to say, stand by for news. Did I do that well?
Oh, you're wonderful.
Thank you very much. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, columnist, commentator, etc., is down there. Judy Patrick, editor of the Gazette of Schenectady, is here.
Nice to be back.
It's great to see you. Absolutely.
I had a professor, who Rex and Judy once, back in college, who used to, a long time ago, who used to cross out the word et cetera every time anybody used it and said, absolutely not. If it's worth saying, it's worth saying. So when you say et cetera, I think of my old college professor.
Well, I'm glad that I bring back happy memories for you.
Et cetera.
You know, et cetera, et cetera. I think of it, it's a laugh line from The King and I. You know, the king would say, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Indeed. Yul Brynner.
Well delivered by Yul Brynner, absolutely. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. I didn't get to introduce myself here yet. I'd like to do that.
That's very important.
But the big news, of course, as you all know, is that Clark Kent has quit the Daily Planet.
You're kidding.
Oh,
and I also found out that Superman had married Lois Lane, or Clark Kent had married Lois Lane, and now they are not married any longer.
Oh, they've been estranged?
We've been away from the comic books for a while, but I guess in the new comic series, Clark quits the planet?
Yep.
Daily Planet. Perry White,
mm-hmm.
Publisher, chief.
Don't call me chief.
Sorry. You know, I never thought Clark would quit.
Really?
Because I thought he was a real newspaper guy and he would stick in it. He thought he knew he was doing an important job. So I'm not buying the new plot line.
Well, I'm told that he's been on the Superman beat recently. It's been quite awkward. He was assigned to cover Superman. So you have to wonder what kind of a reporter is he if he can't find out anything. He's never there.
And that's exactly what happened with Peter Parker in Spider-Man.
Really?
He was a photographer. He was the only one who could get pictures of Spider-Man, Spidey.
Well, there are ethical problems all around here.
I don't think so.
So apparently what happens is Clark Kent becomes is about to become a blogger on media issues, a media critic. But he's miraculously still just 27 years old, so...
And the new writer thinks that Clark is going to be a great blogger, apparently. This is the new direction, Superman or Clark Kent. I'm sorry, I keep getting them confused.
It's hard.
Well, because they're the same guy, that's why you're confused.
Tell everybody.
Oh, so sorry.
Just because you know things, you're in the media.
Or as my Sarah always says, after I see a film, don't tell me.
Anyway, it's big news. It is just indicative of the way things are going. You know, although I was kind of heartened by the new news this week that 40% of Americans under age 30 regularly read daily news or newspapers.
Yeah, I love that too. I'm happy with 40%.
Yeah.
You know why you're happy? Because this is a damn lie, and everybody knows it. You call up some schnook and you say, okay, do you read the newspaper? Sure, I read the newspaper every day. And yet, you ask a kid on, you know, where the Pacific Ocean is, and he can't tell you. Or she.
It is terrible. 62% of
it's a lie.
I don't know. The difficulty is that when I would speak to school groups, I would really encourage kids to read newspapers, and now I really don't do that. I just want them to pay attention to the news. I don't care how they get it. I just really wish that they would listen to public radio, read something in the blogosphere that is real news, as opposed to just picking up whatever they happen to hear their friends talking about on Facebook.
Right, and that survey says that a lot of young people are reading news. They are looking for content.
It's.
I just told you it was a lie. Why do you keep coming back to this?
Now, Dr. Shartok, as the only person in the room with a PhD, you would think that you would be respectful of this kind of research.
Yeah, research. look at the research. You've got the Gallup poll right now. Now, the Gallup poll does research. Fine poll, right? Mm. Does a rolling cumulative number. Mm-hmm. They have Romney, ahead.
Yeah.
But none of the other polls do. So somebody's lying.
Well, no, somebody, I wouldn't say lying. I think that's an indictment that facts don't support. There is perhaps a different methodology. They may be looking at different numbers. And I might just suggest with all due respect that if they had the results showing the other way, you might think that they were a more valid poll.
Maybe. But but think of it this way. Americans are like, lemmings or sheep sometimes, and they like to be on the winning side. So if you get a pollster, and you and I have seen examples of this in the past, Rex, among pollsters, if you get a pollster who is conservative. Now, it's my understanding the head of the Gallup organization is a very conservative man.
Really?
Yeah. And all of a sudden you start to see these things. You say, well, maybe we lemmings are being pulled in one direction because people want to be on the right side of this. What do you think of that provocative statement?
So do you think we should talk about polls less?
Well, I don't think it's going to happen because we are in this country are such a sports mentality that we always want to know, who's winning, the Giants or the other guys, whoever they are. And we want to know that information. And you people like Rex and Judy.
I've heard this is a common thing.
you people.
You people always know what people are most interested in. You know that intuitively. You don't have to take a poll. You know it. And if a new poll comes out, you're putting it up. It's that simple.
And I think there's a hazard to that, to the wish to be on the right side of things. I remember a couple of years ago, a reader after an election writing to me, and he enclosed the summation editorial, the editorial page of the Times Union just before the election does a review of who the page has endorsed. And he circled the ones, pluses next to those that we had gotten right and minuses next to those that we had gotten wrong. And he said, I guess you guys didn't do so well.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not trying to pick the winners. We're just telling people who the editorial board thinks is right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the New York POST, a name which I don't ever pronounce, as we speak, has endorsed. And I'm really surprised, on a 4-page spread. Mitt Romney.
Shocking, really?
It's shocking. Mm-hmm. There's gambling going on here. I read it. It's not convincing. It's sort of pathetic. So here's the thing. They sell 700,000 copies, right? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's 700,000 readers who like to look at the scantily clad ladies and all the other stuff that they put into the paper. How much does the editorial policy, no matter how they push it on 4 pages with tints and dyes and this and that, how much does it really mean in terms of procuring the 700,000 people who are reading votes? It's a run-on sentence, but you got it.
I always think that editorial endorsements make little difference in most races, that very little difference. And particularly when you're talking about that particular newspaper, I think that the people who read the paper, I mean, I think they're reflecting their audience rather than leading their audience.
You think so?
Yes.
I don't.
Yeah, I think their particular audience has a propensity to aim that direction. So
you think that the people who read the Post are by proclivity naturally conservative?
Those who would be involved in voting, yeah, I think probably. I would be very interested to see what percentage of Post readers are actually voters by comparison to the percentage of people who read other newspapers.
Or shoplifters. So, so wait a second now. So you mean, do you think that the New York Times, for example, because I had a lady say to me one day, well, I'm voting for this guy. I said, why? He said, because the Times told me to. And I don't know about these people, but the Times knows about them. So do you think that there's a sort of a scale, algorithmic scale, in which the people who are at the top are, educationally and monetarily, are more likely to take the endorsement of the Times than they are of one of the lower species of newspapers in the evolutionary cycle? I mean, for example, the Daily Mirror in the days, none of you know about the Daily Mirror, but the Daily Mirror, the New York Daily News, who were then the conservative papers, used to say, Roosevelt is terrible.
Yeah, we missed that part.
No, nobody listened to him. What?
It's hard for me to believe nowadays that a lot of people will vote according to what their newspaper endorses. I think they just take it as another opinion. And they talk to a lot of people about who they should vote for, and the newspaper's another opinion. I'm surprised that people tell you that.
Well, they do tell me that.
Well, I mean, my paper doesn't endorse. We don't endorse.
I was going to get to that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How come?
It's a long tradition, and, you know, as I've been editor, I've come to appreciate it because we provide the information. I don't like the idea of telling people who to vote for or encouraging them to vote one way or the other. I want to give them the information, let them decide.
Is it because you're chicken?
Nope, not because I'm chicken.
But why wouldn't you take that position in every other issue? Why should there be an opinion page then that makes any sort of editorial stance?
Because people vote on candidates. They don't vote on issues. We haven't done this, but we probably would take a position on a bond issue or a referendum that's on the statewide ballot.
Okay, let me give you the cynical background.
I'm shocked.
Idea of why you don't do it.
Yeah.
Because you only tick somebody off when you do it. So therefore, if you don't do it, you don't have to worry about ticking off half of your audience.
Well, also, we could also make someone happy if we did it, too. So I'm not making people happy either. But that's not why I do it. We just do it because we believe the voters should decide. I'm not going to tell the lady in Niskayuna who to vote for president.
I think that the place where it has an impact is only in a race where there isn't a lot of knowledge of the candidates. Yeah. Like, for example, we rarely do endorsements in primaries, but we did in a few races this year where the primary is tantamount to election. There are several districts, particularly in Albany County, where there are only Democrats, basically, and where the Democratic primary is really what's going to be the deciding factor, and where there was very little information about the candidates. So we did an endorsement in a couple of those races. And, you know, we had mixed results. It's not that people necessarily follow you or anything, but a couple of the races were really happy to get the endorsement because they thought that it would really make a difference for them.
Okay, so look, half the people don't vote.
Half the people don't vote. Yes, that's right.
Half the people don't vote.
Yes.
Okay. Secondly, I go into the polling booth in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and I know who the select people are. It's my job. I'm a political scientist. I'm supposed to know these things.
Mm-hmm.
But then I get down to things like tree warden and, you know.
Cool job. You elect a tree warden?
Yeah, we do. At least we used to in Alford. So I'm giving you the example. You know, and you go down the list and you don't know anything. So now you begin to look for clues. You begin to look like, what kind of name is that? Is that in my primary group? What road do they live on? Because they say what road, you know, you're on. What?
This is why your local newspaper is important. Your newspaper should be have been telling you about the tree warden candidates. And we know, we understand that as staff cutbacks have affected newspapers right and left, we understand we're leaving some of that information out. It's really a problem. People don't know that we used to run profiles on all these little local races that we just don't, we don't have the capacity to do that.
Although I think the tree warden might merit its own story.
I think you're right.
I think I'm going to get 11,000 letters saying, we don't vote for the tree warden in Craig Barron. But it is true that there is this massive void of information and that we look for somebody who can help us, you know, make up our minds, even though Judy in her rather smug way says, you know, we don't want to do that for people.
We don't want to give them our opinion about it, but we really want to give them the information about the tree warden, what he does, what his experience is, does he know a maple from an oak?
This doesn't sound smug to me. This sounds great humility and appreciation for her role.
Well, my job here
is to stick up for my fellow editor here.
Well, you should. and my job here is to just, you know,
What is your job here? Tell me. Just trying to rile me up.
Yeah, rile you up.
Yeah, that's right.
Do a whole bunch of verbs. I didn't want to use any of them.
B-I-T-A.
Let's try again.
This is, you know, rarely do newspapers do the kind of overtly biased stuff that a lot of people think they do. But in Pennsylvania, they had this ridiculous situation. Richard Mellon Scaife, you know, who is a very wealthy man, a financier of a lot of right-wing causes, owns a bunch of Pennsylvania newspapers. One of his papers is the Mount Pleasant Journal.
Keep a whole bunch of goats outside the building.
They do?
Yeah, Scaife goats.
Scaife's newspaper printed a story with a headline, Photo ID Required for November Election. In fact, that's not true. You know, courts in Pennsylvania had suspended the requirements that they do
disgusting.
Photo ID. It is disgusting.
And that way he figured he'd keep poor people and black people and other Hispanic people away, right? That's the idea.
You know, it's one of the things I love about the Media Project. I get to see these stories that I never would have seen before, and it's just so outrageous, so wrong, and it's incomprehensible to me that this happened.
Well, you got to hope that maybe it was incompetence. You know, I remember once when I was a very young guy, I was the editor of a little local newspaper in Indiana, and we had a huge local controversy about a proposal called CSELM, that stands for Chicago South End of Lake Michigan. It was a proposal to dump Chicago area sewage on farms in northwestern Indiana for land filtration. And of course, the farmers in our community that we were covering things for, were up in arms about this. There was a huge Army Corps of Engineers hearing at the high school gymnasium locally, and U.S. Senator Birch Bayh walked in unexpectedly.
Best name ever in all of politics.
Birch Bayh. Yeah. And, you know, it was very dramatic. This United States senator comes in from Washington, comes into 2,000 people sitting in a gym and to cheers, and he gave this moving speech about you feel the good black earth of Indiana soil oozing up between your toes. You know you don't want that land adulterated by the urban blight. And it was really quite something. And the Indianapolis Star, the statewide newspaper that was covering everything, didn't mention Birch Bayh. He was seeking re-election that year, and they actually blacked out his appearance, or so I thought. And I wrote a column denouncing this. I had a column 3 days a week. I was 21, so my column was called Perspective.
In which?
I was 21,
in
so
which
I
paper,
had Perspective.
Rexy?
The newspaper is called the Rensselaer Republican, okay. Rensselaer, Indiana. So I thought it was just terrible that the Indianapolis Star would black out. Turns out, of course, they had an early edition that went to the outlying parts of the state. I didn't understand that because I was 21. My perspective was limited. And when it was explained to me in no uncertain terms by an editor for the Indianapolis Star who called me yelling and practically spitting his cigar down the phone line, I could tell.
Well, tough nuggies.
You know.
It's still wrong that they went out.
Exactly my point. Thank you for getting there. It was still wrong. It was a result of a deadline problem, and people don't want to know what our problems are in getting the news right. They want it to be right.
Right.
Yep.
And who would throw crap on farmland anyway?
No, they do that.
They do?
No, yeah, there's proposals to do it even today.
But they have to
sewage from sewage treatment plants.
Yeah, and the next time you see, populations being messed up because melons spread some kind of disease, remember that.
But I don't think the voter ID was just a bad head. It was all through the story. They talked about if you don't have your ID, you can file a provisional ballot, and that went to a lot of people who were thinking they're not going to be able to vote.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, Richard Mellon-Scaife, as Alan would say, him I don't like. Isn't that what you
but John
say?
Mellencamp I do like.
The continuing controversy about the media in the UK is now affecting the United States. This has been the latest scandal, and there's just, I mean, the media is being torn apart in Britain as a result of excesses that are obvious over there. This had to do with a long, prominent showman disc jockey named Sir Jimmy Savile, who, when he finally died last year at the age of 84, subsequently it was revealed that he had been a longtime abuser of children. And apparently the BBC had been preparing an investigation of this, and the program was killed. This is now being investigated. A BBC editor has stepped aside as a result of this parliamentary investigation. But now here's the question where it comes to face us. The new CEO of the New York Times Company has just given up his job as director general of the BBC, Mark Thompson.
Of the Beeb.
So the question is, what did he know and when did he know it? And this question, I think, is going to dog him in his new job on this side of the Atlantic until there are some serious answers given, right?
Well, let's assume for a second that he knew. We don't know that, but let's assume he knew. And you're the young Sulzberger, the publisher. Do you want to get rid of him because reputation is everything for the Times?
Yes. You absolutely have to get rid of him. The same way that the trustees of Penn State had to get rid of Graham Spanier, the president.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And it seems like they're splitting hairs over in England, whether he knew or was aware of. They're making that distinction and what he did and what he didn't do.
And what's the difference between knowing and being aware of?
There is no difference in my book.
But, you know, it just goes to show that the paradigm is shifting all the time. I mean, at this station, we've had instances where there have been some very serious accusations made against staff members. And the first thing we do is bring in a lawyer from outside who does an investigation as to whether or not there was, you know, we had one years ago, we had one woman say that she was being harassed by somebody else who worked here. And you bring in an outsider and you cover yourself because it's the only thing you should do. And if you don't do that, you're stupid.
Absolutely.
And it seems as though the BBC aired a tribute to this guy, this Saville, in December, while the other parts of the company knew this investigation was going on. I think the tribute was, not well-timed.
Yeah.
Or should have been killed.
You have a way of understating things.
It's very nice, very nice. Finally today, perhaps.
Already? Show is almost over?
Well, you know, there are only about 3.5 minutes left, and so it's appropriate for me to say finally today.
This ought to be an hour show.
Oh, geez, here we go again. Isn't that what Ray Graff always says when you're talking to him? Oh, geez, here we go again. Anyway, binders. Binders was, of course, the word that we might say, the meme is the word of time. Binders full of women, because when Mitt Romney in the debate, the second debate, sure, talked about this is how he got women candidates for his administration, suddenly the Twitter sphere just lit up with people
immediately saying, it's a lie.
No, we're making jokes about binders.
But also that he said he was the one who asked for the information, and along came, I believe it was the League, but it may not have been, and said, no, we did this on our own and gave them to him. There's a big difference.
Yeah, there's two parts to this. The fact that the Twitter world came alive with this, and then that a real journalist out in Massachusetts wrote a story about what exactly happened with these binders full of women, who proposed it, and exactly what Mitt Romney did with it. So that, in that respect, the story was productive. But 3 or 4 years ago, binders full of women would have ended up on SNL that Saturday night. Nowadays, SNL was a few days behind. Things go fast nowadays.
Stuff does. And the difficulty, the sad part actually is that becomes what people remember about things. You know, what people remember about the third debate is what? Bayonets.
Oh, yeah, and horses.
And bayonets and horses. The president's put down Mitt Romney for not understanding the contemporary Navy. The binders was the thing out of the second debate. The first debate was basically, you know, the president was napping. But the difficulty is when things like that, when, let's say, Big Bird was maybe the meme of the first debate.
Sure.
So when Big Bird, binders, and bayonets.
Ooh, BBB.
Hey, cool. Yeah. That becomes what you remember from this, as opposed to the substance. Then you get into the issue, Alan, that you were talking about earlier, of young people not following the news. Or the difficulty is, even if people do follow the news, what they get is this superficial layer, sure, of stuff rather than the substance.
And whose fault is it? You guys.
Yeah, but
it's
your
fault.
But in all three of those cases, then we discuss public financing of public radio and public television. And then with the binders full of women, maybe we will talk more about the role of women in government. And with bayonets and horses, maybe we'll talk about the Navy and what it's doing nowadays. So that's what real journalism will do.
Oh, boy.
That's good. That would be hopeful.
No. That is hopeful. Oh, I mean, you got to have hope.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's a good thought. Well, actually,
and heart. You got
to
have that.
And
too.
It does bring the story then to people who might not listen to all the boring analysis on NPR. And they would instead be, you know, since it's just all of our fault.
By the way, I agree with that.
Oh, really?
Yes.
The boring analysis?
I don't like the pundits. I'm, you know.
There's only one pundit he likes.
That's not pundit. That's truth.
You're not a pundit. Oh! So much for punditry. Oh, well. Okay, folks. So your favorite pundit is leaving the air momentarily here.
But not for long.
Not for long. He'll be back. All right, so I'm Rex Smith from the Times Union, Judy Patrick from the Gazette, and Dr. Pundit Chartok here. We're grateful that you've joined
Sounds
us.
Sounds Indian.
See ya. Fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Thank you.
on newspapermen meet such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go.